Today on a special edition of Turnbuckle Trash, we'll talk to the superstar Bill Dundee, a legendary professional wrestler from the heyday of the Memphis Territory. He's 75 years old, still works out every day, and still performs in the ring. If you'd like to check out Bill's podcast, it's called If You Don't Want the Answer, Don't Ask the Question. He also has a book called If You Don't Want the Answer, Don't Ask the Question, Bill Dundee's Life Story. You can get that by bill.dundee@yahoo.com. That's his email address. And Bill also said if you'd like to call him or text him, that is 901-356-0387. Stand by, a fascinating interview with the superstar, Bill Dundee. It's next on Turnbuckle Trash.
This is TurnbuckleTrash.net.
After all, they're just wrestling, right?
Woo! We'll break your bones! We'll grind you into putty! We'll turn your faces off!
It's time to take out the trash on Turnbuckle Trash. Pro wrestling from a fan's perspective.
Without further ado, allow me to present the newest sensation of the entertainment world,
Zane Peterson.
Well, he's doing really, really well blocking those punches with his face.
Dave Denton.
A mindless eating machine.
Ready, master control?
Ready, switch on.
This is Turnbuckle Trash.
I'm taking the trash out.
Today on Turnbuckle Trash, I am getting back into my youth because in the mid-70s to the 80s, you could always find me Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock sitting in front of the television when WMC Channel 5 would have championship wrestling. My favorite announcing team of all time for wrestlers, Lance Russell, Dave Brown, they would do the play-by-play and do a wonderful job at it. But one of my favorite things was when Lance Russell would stand in front of the podium and he'd interview the wrestlers. So I'm hoping I can do Mr. Russell even proud when I say, welcome to Turnbuckle Trash, the superstar Bill Dundee. How you doing, Bill?
Doing good, brother. You did a good job of that. Lance would be proud.
Oh, I was such a fan of not only yourself, but Mr. Russell and Dave Brown, and thought they did such a wonderful job with the announcing. And since I'm in radio still myself to this day in Logan, Utah, I thought that their delivery is just being as natural as could be was just fantastic. But that's neither here nor there, because we're going to talk about professional wrestling with the superstar Bill Dundee. Bill, you now live right outside of Memphis, Tennessee, an area called Germantown, is that correct?
No, Rossville. We moved from Germantown to Rossville.
Oh, Rossville. Okay, very familiar with that area. Spent a lot of time in Collierville during my day, too. So.
Okay, well, that's where I am right this minute. I just pulled up at the gym, but I'd rather talk to you and go in there and lift weights, so we're good.
Oh, well, Bill, back in 74 and 75, you came to Memphis, Tennessee, and I believe you were living in Australia at the time. You came as part of a tag team, and then something clicked. What made this young man born in Scotland, raised in Melbourne, Australia, what made him want to settle in Tennessee, in West Tennessee?
Well, George Barnes and I worked for Jim Barnett when he brought Georgia Championship Wrestling to Australia. He didn't call it Georgia, he just called it Championship Wrestling. And guys like Mark Lewin, Skull Murphy, Ruth Bernard, Mario Milano, all them big, and they were big old boys. They were all over 6 feet tall and 250 pounds. And they said, Dundee, you're a hell of a worker, but you're just too small to make any money in this business. I said, yeah, but look how cute I am. So, I mean, that was really the thing that I tried to sell. I couldn't be 6 feet tall, but there was no, And I've had other people tell me that back in the good old days, nobody's face was any prettier than mine for a man. And the girls loved it, and that's what they came. And when girls come to the show, the little boys come to talk to the girls. So it was a good thing all around. Superstar drew the girls, and Lawler and them drew all the men, and it was how it worked.
Well, I remember when Mr. Russell would interview you, you were always so polite to him. You would always say, well, thank you, Mr. Russell. And then your promo style was kind of subdued, but it really worked, especially in that era where everything was so hyped.
Well, here is the thing, when they did like Vic the Bruiser, the Crusher, all them guys that came a little bit ahead of my generation, they all hollered and screamed. But I thought, I don't like that. I mean, you don't holler. When you go into a store, you don't say to the clerk, hey, give me a pint of milk. You just ask for a pint of milk or whatever you're buying. But I thought, that's bullshit. You know, nobody talks like that. And so I just never did it. And I was just being smaller too. So, but that's how I saw it. And it worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, you were several times tag team champion, and I guess that's part of my love of tag team wrestling to this day, is watching you with the various tag team partners you had, from Jerry Lawler to Rocky Johnson and all those in between, Wildfire, Tommy Rich, and more. Watching you guys wrestle as a tag team with other people like the Road Warriors occasionally, or the Fabulous Ones, or even the Midnight Express when they would come into town. To me, tag team wrestling was so hot back then, and I really wish it would come back.
Right, well, here's the thing, the hard thing to get it to come back. And I don't know why the younger guys or the wrestlers all think that they're the star or whatever they want to be. I mean, they fucking jump off the top of the building to land in the ring. That's nothing to do with wrestling. Tag team wrestling is hard because you have a partner and you go to click like a well-oiled machine. I mean, if
to quote a friend of mine, I guess you could call him a friend of mine. Remember, Handsome Jimmy used to say, "Woo, I feel good today." Remember? Well,
yes,
I feel good today, and I'm going to do a little, I guess you could call it bragging, because okay, if you all tuned in a couple of weeks ago, somebody said to me, "You're going to wrestle Jerry Lawler." I said, "Yeah, I'm going to wrestle Jerry Lawler because he wants to be the world's champion, and I want to be the world's champion. We're going to have a little match to decide who's going to wrestle the world's champion."
Yes.
See? So then, some clown runs in, jumps in, makes Jerry mad, makes me mad. So we get up and we fight him. So we become a tag team. And let me tell you, folks, for years, we was the best tag team around here. We done whooped them all, brother. And if they lined them up now, we could do it again. If you took the Road Warriors, Jerry and I could whoop them. If you took the Freebirds, Jerry and I could whoop them. If you took the Rock and Roll Express, Jerry and I could whoop them. We whooped Joe LeDuc, Jean-Louis, the Valiant Brothers. We done whooped them all. We could beat the Fabulous Ones. We could beat the Sheepherders. We could whoop everybody, brother. Now, I know some people say, well, he's bragging today. He's all fired up. Yeah, but if you've got something good, you tell the peoples, brother. The king and the superstar, when they're on, Jack, they're the best there is.
To do tag team wrestling good, there's nothing better to watch. But when you watch a bad tag, it's terrible. So I don't know why they go away from it. Memphis was the hotbed of tag team wrestling when we came to Australia. That's why Bobby Shane called Jerry Jarrett and got us booked in Memphis when we first come here in 75. A guy by the name of George Barnes and I showed up January 75, and we got over like a house on fire. He got homesick, and you know, he had a few other things going on in his life. So he went back, I stayed, and the rest is history, as they say.
Well, Bill, what was it about West Tennessee and the Memphis area that attracted you to stay? I mean, you obviously were a great worker in the ring. You had the personality, like you said, the ladies just loved you to death. What was it that attracted you to want to stay in the Memphis territory?
Well, I think I just said it earlier. I mean, most of the other territories were big guys. Dick the Bruiser was a big guy, so he liked to work against big guys. Jerry Jarrett was my size, so he was the brains of Memphis wrestling, so he knew little guys could get over. But all the rest of the country, they were looking for monsters, and I wasn't a monster in the fact that stature-wise, but I could get mad like anybody else, and the monster would come out in me, but that worked for the good part. But so Memphis liked little guys, and I was a little guy back then, and still I am, and I just made it my home. I like Jerry Jarrett, I like Eddie Marlin, everybody that run Memphis Wrestling. I mean, Jerry Lawler and I ain't the best of friends, but we respect one another, and we, you know, his way of living is my way of living. It was completely different. He didn't go to the gym and work out, I did. All them other things, and I drank, and he didn't. So nothing, you had to drink, but most people drank beer back in the good old days, so I was pretty good at that and pretty good at lifting weights. So here we are 40 years later.
And, you know, you mentioned something I was actually going to ask you about, was your relationship with Jerry Lawler. You know, I've read many times, and I don't know this for a fact, that there was a professional courtesy there. You guys worked very well together, although you weren't the best of friends.
Right. And that's how it was. I mean, you don't have to be the, you know, back then they didn't want you to be friends. And Jerry Jarrett kept the barbering between me and Lawler, you know, and he knew if we were kind of not mad at one another, but we were kind of pissed off at one another to go do the interview, we would say things maybe that you couldn't get away with saying today about one another. And it drew money, and that was what it was. So, I mean, Jerry Jarrett was the smartest guy I ever was around. Well, Bobby Shane was smart, but that was who got us booked here in Australia when he booked for Barnett in the 70s. So that's how we ended up here. A guy called Jerry Jarrett, and here we are. Me and George Barnes showed up January 75.
Well, where I'm living at now in Utah was part of the old AWA territory, and you and Jerry actually won the AWA tag titles together twice. What was that like?
Right. Well, the AWA you grew up watching wasn't technically the AWA that was when me and Lawler got around, because Jerry Jarrett was running it, so it became an extension of Memphis. So I never had much to do with Greg Gagne Jr. or even the old man Gagne. We still stayed in the Tennessee end, if that's what you want to call it. So it never seemed like it changed any for me. We just worked the same way, done the same type matches, and I don't. Jarrett and the promotion never go along. So when he left, we left.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you about that era when the territories were starting to be bought out, basically by Vince and the conglomerate we now know as the WWE. But you guys in Memphis were so hot. You were one of the real last cowboys in the fight, just still drawing huge money and huge crowds at the Mid-South Coliseum. What was it like to dominate that area so much?
Well, at the time, you're really doing it because there's no internet. Like, if there'd been an internet back in that day like it was today, but you never really knew what was happening at Gagne's or in Georgia, or, you know what I mean, unless you talked to one of the boys who came through. You just concentrated on your own little piece of the world, and that's how Memphis, I think, was good, because nobody was really wanting to leave. It was on fire, and you could do everything you wanted in Memphis.
Now, you saw some of the biggest names of the last 20, 25 years come through Memphis. Terry Bolder become Hulk Hogan. He was in Memphis for a while. You had people like Steve Austin. You also had other people like The Rock even trained there for a while. And his dad, Rocky Johnson, and you won a tag title together. And before I let you talk about that, I wanted to tell you that one of my favorite memories of going to the Mid-South Coliseum was when Rocky Johnson won that Southern title to become the first black man to ever win a title in the South like that. It was an incredible experience to go to the Mid-South Coliseum. It had to be just something to be a part of that era of wrestling.
Yeah, but and you could tell by the way he lived his life, Elvis Presley never really knew that he was Elvis Presley to the extent he was, or he wouldn't have done all the stupid stuff that he did. When you're doing the thing, you don't really see yourself in that light like the wrestling fan or the singing fan sees the singer. So we just went out Saturday morning, made a TV show, went to Memphis Monday night and hoped it would sell out. Most of the time it did. And that's really what we did. But you're not really thinking, oh boy, I'm great, this is that. But I will tell you this much, back in the era me and Lawler was running around doing Memphis, there was Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Jerry Lawler, and Bill Dundee, and then I don't know what order the people thought the biggest star was. You'd have to give it to Elvis, I guess. But we was on up there as far as people seeing us on the street and running up for autographs and screaming and hollering and all the things that they did. The kids today doesn't have a clue how that was.
Yeah, I remember so much that, you know, I was in high school when you came in to start your career in Memphis, and it was like every Monday we would be talking about what we saw on Saturday at school, and even some of my friends would call each other after the WMC show and talk about what we were, and we would plan ways to try to get to the Mid-South Coliseum, and luckily parents sometimes took us, so we got to go to a lot of those matches and see you perform. It was just one of the great memories of my teenage years.
Right, and that story, everybody in Memphis did that, of the younger ones back in that era. You've no idea the people I meet at the gym or walking down the street, or they just walk up and say, "Hey, you Dundee?" Yeah, and they get talking, and he'll tell me that same story, how they would, you know, beg their mom and dad to take them Monday nights to the Coliseum, let them watch it on TV and all that kind of stuff. So we knew we were pretty big stars or pretty important in Memphis at the time we was doing it, but this is what we did for a living, and it's just that's what we did. So we wanted to sell that on Monday night because you got more money if it sold that and if it was just half full. So that was always money for me.
Hey, you know what? Money pays the bills, doesn't it?
Right, right.
I was going to ask you just a little bit about the era again, because a lot of people now are looking back at that era, especially in the South and in the Memphis territory, especially as kind of being the beginnings of hardcore wrestling. You guys did some crazy, crazy stunts, and one in particular, I know you get asked a million times about, but I would just love to hear it straight from your mouth, about that Tupelo concession stand brawl that you guys had.
Our time is running out right now. We're going to have to call it quits as our time is up on Championship Wrestling. It looks like that they are outside the ring. This is Lance Russell from the Tupelo Sports Arena.
Hey, Mike, can you get the camera? They got a hell of a fight going on down here. See, can you get it down? Let me get the light stand off here. Bring it on. We'll go back and edit it.
I know it. We'll edit it back in. Okay, can you get it rolling? What you're looking at is the wildest fight we've seen. Latham and Ferris and Dundee and Lawler in the concession stand, all four of them bleeding, pounded each other. Lawler, ooh, fired a gallon jug. They're banging away. Watch out, Mike. Dundee with Latham and Lawler with Ferris. Oh, there's mustard all over us. I hope it didn't get in the camera. Dundee right on top of Latham, right below us. We're on the stairs leading down to the concession stand. What a brawl. I've never seen anything like it. Now, they're trying to get somebody in to help stop this thing. This is just totally out of hand. Latham and Ferris, Lawler and Dundee in the concession stand at the Tupelo Sports Arena.
Oh, God, I wish I could take credit for laying that out. That just happened. Eddie Marlin, if you watch the tape, you'll see Eddie Marlin come down cussing at us. Get out of the goddamn concession stand. He'd be screaming at us. I mean, we were picking the Lawler. It started when Lawler picked up the damn jar of popcorn or pickles or whatever it was and threw it at Larry Latham. And that's how it all started. But we wasn't supposed to go over there. That was a no-no. But we jumped over there thinking they won't follow us, but they did. So once they get there, we had to start fighting. So that's how it was. But so that started off as an action and ended up drawing money all over the territory. But nobody said, let's get into the guessing stand. It just happened. And when Lawler threw the jar of pickles or whatever it was on.
And Dundee and Lawler in the concession stand, all four of them bleeding, pounded each other. Lawler, ooh, fired a gallon jug. They're banging away. In 27 years of it, I've never seen a battle like this. And Lawler trying to be strangled by Ferris while Dundee with a mop wailing Latham.
Now, you were against Larry Latham, who went on to become one of the Moondogs, and Wayne Ferris.
Yeah, the Bond Bombers, they call him Wayne Ferris. They were the Bond Bombers then.
Yeah, and then Wayne Ferris was part of that group, and he went on to become the Honky Tonk Man, so people will know.
Stole my gimmick with a jumpsuit, too, at the Vince McMahon.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Well, that's where he saw it. He was in Memphis when I was doing it.
I remember that.
He didn't have friggin' black hair when he went up there. He had blonde hair.
That's... You're just bringing back my memories. I agree with you, Bill. He did. Oh, now I got something to say on the next podcast. Thanks for jogging my memory there. That was awesome. But with that, I remember I was working and living in Paris, Tennessee at the time, because there was a TV program that would show on one of the Jackson TV stations late at night on a Saturday. And I remember watching that video in my my aunt and uncle's kitchen on a little black and white TV at the time, and just being fascinated by that spot. And now you can see it on YouTube. It's talked about by professional wrestling fans like myself all the time. But I want to move on from that to, I want to move on now, because Bill Dundee is still active in the business. You have a very popular book. Give us the name of the book and how we can purchase that.
Well, I called it the name of that name, and I want to tell you why I did it. You'll say, well, that makes sense. When you, even back in the good old days, the people would say, hey, did you watch my match? And you'd come back and say, how was my match? And back then, you were talking about Rocky Johnson, you were talking about Jerry Lawler, you were talking about Jackie Fargo, guys that could actually do this business. But today, it's a different kettle of fish, and I don't really get into that. But they go, hey, did you watch my match? And then sometimes you would say the wrong thing. And if you said the wrong thing, no, it sucked. They would get pissed off at you. So I just said, my book is going to be, if you don't want the answer, don't ask the question. Because if you ask me the question, I will answer it the best I can. So if your match sucked, I will tell you, in my opinion, why I think it was wrong. So that's how I called my book that. And that was just, I thought, well, that's a pretty good name for the book. So. And it's doing pretty fair, and it's not the biggest, thickest wrestling book, but it's about as true as you can get for Memphis anyway.
Yeah, and how can our listeners get a copy of that? Because I would love to get a copy of that myself.
You have my phone number. You just call me, and I'll send it to you. Oh. Or you can tell them they can call this phone number if they want a book, and I'll answer it. Because you can go to my website, I think it's bill.dundee@yahoo.com. That's my website, so you can email me or whatever, or they can just text me on that phone number you're about to give them.
Okay, I surely will. And that number is area code 901-356-0387. We'll make sure we repeat that a couple of times during the podcast, and also put it onto our Turnbuckle Trash Facebook page. But Bill, let's talk about what you're doing now. I know you're still... you're actually still performing, you're booking, you're promoting. What are some of the things that keep Bill Dundee interested in this business?
Well, I mean, I always enjoyed this business. I started off in judo at my uncle's judo school in Scotland, and there was a couple of professional wrestlers come to work at on the mat in the judo school. And I asked them, I said, hey, man, I'd like to be a wrestler. I said, Bill, you're not big enough. Because even in England or Britain, they had smaller guys, but the smaller guys were still bigger than me. So I said, well, I'd just like to learn it. So one of them came by. He said, well, one day we'll come down, I'll work out with you and see what you got, what it takes. And I remember Britain did more wrestling than they did in America. It was a lot of punching and kicking in America, and it was holds and canter holds in Britain back in the 50s and the 70s. So that's how I started off doing it, and I got pretty fair at it. Then when Bobby Shane came to Australia, we talked to him about getting booked in America. He said, well, I'll call Jerry Jarrett. I said, Bobby, 10,000 people have told they're going to do that, and we're still here. He said, I'll do it. So he went and said, what time is it? The time will be different from Australia to here. So anyway, when we got the time figured out, Jarrett would be up. He called him, and here we are 40 years later.
That's awesome. And you still promote stuff in South Haven? Was it
yeah,
at Sam's
we still
Club
do a little bit. I mean, I help with it. I don't really do the thinking. After 40 years, brother, and it's not what I did, and the kids are a little different with the way they think or see wrestling, so I don't like to get into the fishing contest every night at the matches, so I let somebody else take the heat and say, well, they're promoting it, but I'll talk to them about what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. Then they'll talk to the boys.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. Now, I know your son also was part of the business. Does he still perform?
He's goofy. I don't know what's wrong with Jamie. He'll take bookings and won't show up.
Oh, you can't
do
that.
You can only do that two or three times, and you can't do that. You know how that is. If you don't show up, they just quit booking you. So I don't know what's wrong with that boy.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, some of the sons that can't follow the dads, they get on the alcohol thing or the drug thing and start doing silly shit and, you know, just, I don't know.
Yeah, that's got to be, I think a lot of people have that happening in their families, especially nowadays. It's a real shame that people can't control themselves and if they're going to enjoy that, enjoy it in a proper manner. So, Bill, I give you my heartfelt condolences.
And
there.
I can understand Jamie's kind of frustration with it. We'd go to the wrestling matches, and they would just call him Bill's boy. Yeah, hey, that's Bill's boy. Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to be, my dad's name was Mick. I wouldn't want, well, that's Mick's boy. I would like to be Bill Dundee, and Jamie would have wanted to be Jamie Dundee. And God rest his soul, Brian Christopher was the same thing. People would say, hey, that's Lawler's boy. That's Brian Christopher. Well, you don't want to be somebody's boy. You want to be your own man or your own thing. So I guess them doing the wild stuff, they thought that would get them out. Well, what it does, it gets you out on a plane by yourself. But I don't know, man. That wasn't my way of life. So I don't know what goes wrong with them younger guys.
Well, you've been in the business now over 40 years. You've seen some major changes. And some of these changes are not necessarily for the better, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
What do you think about, and I'm going to ask you the question, and I want that answer that you've been talking about. What is wrong with professional wrestling today?
Okay, I learned, this is how, when I started, even in Australia, with Jim Barnett, when he booked it and Mark Lewin was the booker, they would book the younger guys or the young kids with older, grumpy heels. And they would make you do shit. You just couldn't go out there and fly around all over the place and do stupid stuff. They taught you what to do and when to do it and timing and all the things. You know how this business works. So you'd have a guy like Skull Murphy or Brute Bernard. They're not going to let you do something stupid, and they're not going to take no silly bumps for you. So you had to make it more real, and it was real to me and still real to me today. But some of them young kids I watch that you'll see on the internet where they take a silly bump and they break their ankle or they throw their knee out, well, good luck to them. I mean, so all the guys that did silly bumps back in our era can't walk today. I'm 75 and still wrestling. Now, I took bumps enough to get by in the match, but I never did stupid stuff.
Yeah. Well, you got to be smart about everything you do in life, I would
right,
think.
Everything. In life, I mean, if you drive your car 100 miles an hour, you're either going to wreck it and maybe get hurt or killed, or you're going to get a ticket.
Right.
So you can't just drive up and down the road like an idiot, but a lot of people do it. And so I've always tried to live my life right. Yeah, I drank a few beers every now and again. I did this, did that, never did no heavy drugs. But, I mean, that was just, you know, my choice, and I went to the gym every day, worked that, still go like I told you. Gym there when the phone rang, so I'm still sitting in my truck just talking to you. And when I'm done, I'm going to go in there and work out, go home and have something to eat and see what the rest of the day brings.
That is awesome. We have a friend of the program that is involved in the business as a wrestling manager. His name is Matthew Robles. He goes by professional name of the MK Bandit. And he was on recently on the House of Hardcore with Tommy Dreamer. He's done a little bit of trying out and a little bit of stuff with Impact. He made a statement that I'd like to get your opinion on. He said on our podcast, there are WWE fans and then there are pro wrestling fans. And I'd like maybe your thoughts on that statement from the MK Bandit.
Well, I understand what he's saying. Let me give it to you this way, and we'll go back to the music business. When Elvis Presley hit, there was Elvis Presley, and the rest of the people were just in the music business. So then Jerry Lee Lewis came along, Roy Orbison, and guys started emulating Elvis or doing that kind of music, rock and roll, they called it back in the 50s. So wrestling's the same way. I mean, the guys that fly around and think they're doing this and that they're taking silly bumps and blah, 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 don't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch, couldn't go behind you, take you down, or do nothing of that stuff. So it's a different era, and I really don't talk to none of them as far as what do you do or how do you think. They don't want to hear what I got to say, so I go to the show and I tell the promoter, don't book me with no young kid because the match will suck. mainly because he won't want to do what he thinks I can do or can't do, but he won't want to do what I can do in a shoot, so that'll be the end of that.
You know, I've talked to several different, especially independent performers, and they all tell me you have to trust that partner that you're out there, whether you're wrestling as a tag team or if you're wrestling in a singles match. You got to really have a moment of trust with these people that they're not going to hurt you and that you're not going to hurt them. That's got to be kind of an interesting thing, right?
Yeah, but here is the thing. Back when I started, most people could, they knew how to hurt you.
Yeah.
Not that they would or they could or they didn't. Loose hands. I mean, he could hurt you in his sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Just walking by you, he could hurt you. You know, I mean, Carl Gotch. George Barnes was a tough son of a gun. The guy I came over here with, he could wrestle and he could fight and he could do all the other things. I mean, so to get respect, you either earn it or you do, you know, whatever. So I had George for a partner, so that made me tough.
Wow, that's awesome.
No, but I like George. We were both pretty good at what we did.
Now, you do some podcasting of your own. Is the name of your podcast the same as your book?
I got a podcast, yeah.
It's If You Don't Want the Answer.
The name of Lex Luthor. I think it's called the same thing, the name of the book. If you don't want the answer, don't ask the question.
And who do you do that podcast with?
A guy by the name of Lex Luthor.
Really? Cool.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. Well, Bill Dundee, I've got to tell you, this is like a bucket list moment for me as a wrestling fan to be able to talk to you because I have enjoyed your work so much over the years and a great deal of respect for you at 75, still going to the gym, working out, and I thank you so much for taking time. And I'm going to hop aboard your website. I'm going to order your book right now, okay?
All right, brother. Well, I appreciate that. If you let me call or thing, I'll sign one, and then when we send it out there, you'll make sure it's signed. So.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much, Bill. And you get out there and work out and get some sweat in there, okay?
Oh, I'm going to do that, but it's still freaking cold to get out of this truck. It's raining like cats and dogs, and it's cold right
now. Yeah.
Unbelievable for the South. It's not supposed to. Now, where you are, you get that, but it ain't supposed to do that here.
And you've had some pretty nasty weather there in the South this year. I have a...
Right.
Yeah, I still have
and
some
And I just watched
there.
The weather forecast last night. We're supposed to get cold rain all week. Not ice and snow. The temperature will be in the low 40s, but that's still cold rain.
Well. Well, the superstar, Bill Dundee, I grew up watching you perform. I saw you several times at the Mid-South Coliseum, and thank you so much for joining us today on Turnbuckle Trash. Thanks, Bill.
All right, brother, I appreciate it. If you want to do it again sometime, you got my number, and if anybody else wants to say to ask you how you get hold of Bill Dundee, you can give them that number if they want to do a podcast or want to do something. So, I mean, you just keep old Willie's name out there. I appreciate it.
I surely will, and we'll put this onto our podcast, and then we'll also put some stuff on there. And I'll just send you a text, if that's okay, with my address, and I'll order it through your Yahoo site, though, okay?
All right, brother, I appreciate you. Thanks for the whatever long we talked, 40 minutes. I enjoyed it.
Oh, man, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
All right, brother, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is TurnbuckleTrash.net.
Those guys look big and mean. I think they want to hurt us.
What do you call that, a flying springboard knee to the face?
Oh, that works.
I like to hurt people.
Pretending to wrestle is the most fun in the whole world.
The thoughts and opinions heard on the preceding program are not necessarily those of an intelligent human being. If you don't agree with them, get your own dang pod.
Dummy.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. And in the immortal words of Ric Flair, woo!